I spent a long time last night after writing this thinking about when to do it. I decided to start the show with a special Chicago Fire comment, and it sounds ridiculous saying it, that I wrote. So, I was 7 years old on March 21st, 1998. For those of you who haven't committed that date to your heart and memory, that was the day of the first ever match of the Chicago Fire Soccer Club. I, of course, was not there. Aside from being 7 years old and not even being so much as allowed to cross the street by myself, the game was in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, against the now non-existent Miami Fusion. Fire won that night by a score of 2-0, a harbinger of what was to come, as after the end of the season, the score in soccer was Chicago Fire 2 trophies, the rest of MLS 0. And for those of you complaining that the LA Galaxy won the Supporter Shield, it didn't officially exist until 1999. If I'm to be completely honest, I don't remember much from that year. I remember going and watching games, to be sure, but don't really remember what happened. It wasn't until Kick TV was created, and they put the 1998 MLS Cup Final on YouTube, that I remembered that it was Jerry Podbrozny who scored the game winner from Peter Nowak, who also got the assist when Diego Gutierrez iced the game. I also needed YouTube to see the mythical Frank Klopas golden goal a week later at Soldier Field to win the team's first of four U.S. Open Cups, the most in the modern era. This was not my memories of the Chicago Fire. Mine was the 2001 to 2006 version of the club. U.S. legend Eric Winalda, who scored 10 goals in 12 appearances for the club in 2001. Three future U.S. men's national team captains, Chris Armas, Carlos Bocanegra, and DeMarcus Beasley. The Fire's all-time leading scorer, Ante Razov. And the only player to win the European Player of the Year, La Liga, the Champions League, the U.S. Open Cup, and to be named to FIFA's list of 100 greatest players of all time, Hristo Stoichkov. All of whom were dedicated to the badge and to the city in which they played. And to the team, it kept evolving, bringing on new players who were just as committed to the excellence in which their forebears set. Logan Paws, who despite criticism and even derision, became in 2011 the captain. The one constant in the squad, like CJ Brown and Diego Gutierrez and Chris Armas before him. There was that short little Ohioan by the name of Chris Rolfe, who scored a goal against AC Milan in 2005 that became as mythical as the shirt on his chest that day. To those also who were maybe less remembered, but just as important, like Thiago, or Paolo Anchope, or Ivan Guerrero, or Andy Herron, who was always good to his mother, and the list goes on and on and on. What I remember most was not how they were successful, or how they won trophies, or even how they failed to get past the dreadedness that was Taylor Twellman and Steve Ralston and Jeff Lorenowitz and the New England Revolution in the playoffs. What I remember most was the commitment, day in, day out. The commitment to the badge, the commitment to the guys in the seats, and the commitment to each other. This was the era of the birthplace of the club motto, passion, honor, tradition. Which brings me to Wednesday night's 1-1 draw in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. We all knew what was at stake. Even with a heartbreaking loss to Seattle last week, the dice rolled in favor of the Fire. They were just 2 points off a playoff spot. And what luck! They were playing one of the most hapless clubs in the league, Toronto FC. It hadn't even been a week since they fired the top guy in the organization, Kevin Payne, for what I can only assume was incompetence. Really? Should have been a cakewalk. Get in, get 3 points, and prepare to defend the fifth spot with your lights against your old rivals on Saturday. Instead, what we got was what Hot Time at Old Town's Marco Rourke called a tepid, milquetoast performance against one of the worst teams in the league. The two goals came within 4 minutes of each other. The Fire struck first, when this year's revelation, Dilly Duca, who had showed promise in its years before moving to Chicago from Columbus, but never materialized consistently, put in a cross that missed everything but the back of the net. And then, Robert Earnshaw put it in for Toronto, Gonzalo Sigueras bought what was the soccer equivalent of a pump fake, and he blasted it past a hapless Bakari Sumari into the net. Sean Spence put it aptly in his recap of the game. Presented with a road match against one of the league's real road apples, Frank Klopas wrote in a lineup of unwavering sameness. Sean Johnson, Jahlil Anibaba, Austin Berry, Bakari Sumari, Gonzalo Sigueras, Jeff Lorenowitz, Alex, Duca, Patrick Nyako, Mike McGee, and Chris Rolfe. A defensive block of five, a back-and-forth dude, a four-man attacking block tasked with moving and creating. Toronto, in contrast, looked like a team recently acquainted. They played in combination only rarely, preferring to play it in bursts down the flanks, and yet, somehow, this was sufficient. Watching that live, it felt like the whole thing was right there, and we just couldn't be bothered to reach out and grab it. That last sentence right there, it bothers me. It felt like the whole thing was right there, and we couldn't just be bothered to go and grab it. It bothers me because the teams of the past would. When times were rough and down, someone, be it Peter Nowak, or Ante Razov, or DeMarcus Beasley, or Kotemuk Blanco, or Chris Rolfe version 1, or Chris Armas, or Marco Papa, or Sebastian Grazzini, or Patrick Nyako, or Mike McGee of last June, would have picked the game up by the scruff of the neck, and they would have won that game Wednesday night in Toronto. I have no idea what's changed in the past month and a half. Maybe it's all the front office drama, from the transfer window disaster, to the designated player that it turns out can't play 90 minutes, to the White Party controversy, to the two editorials written by the Director of Communications, Dan Lobring. It's been one thing after another after another. Maybe the other teams have adjusted and found out this Fire team. Maybe the players know that and subconsciously are doubting themselves. Maybe it's a combination of all of this has caused the players to be mentally exhausted. I don't know. What I do know is that this wasn't the Chicago Fire team that gutted out so many games last year. This wasn't the team that scrapped and clawed their way to being 2 points back of a playoff spot. This was not that Chicago Fire. Saturday night, they have an opportunity to rectify this. Saturday night, they play a team that haunts my dreams at night. Fortunately, maybe. Maybe unfortunately, it's not Taylor Twellman or Steve Ralston or Jeff Lorenowitz that faced them in New England Revolution Blue on Saturday. Instead, they get Diego Fagundes, Juan Toja, Kellen Rowe. That's the New England Revolution they're playing in what's essentially a playoff game, as they all are now. Saturday, they have a chance to save not only themselves and the season, but save the memories of those who came before them. Jerry Podbrosny, Chris Armas, Peter Nowak, the man called Hristo. However, this Saturday is also the seventh to last game of the year. This Saturday, they run out of time.